Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our look at why deaths in custody or after being held in police custody continue to persist. Attempts to make the police force more accountable and to reduce incidents of abuse have had a checkered history, beginning perhaps with the Royal Commission of Inquiry 2 decades ago and a short-lived revival under the 22-month Pakatan Harapan government. What prospects are there for reform of police custody practices now? Let's speak to Ding Joanne, an advisor for the Centre for Independent Journalism. Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight, Joanne. Now, basic question, why do you think this problem of custodial deaths persist? A basic question, but I'm sure one that's very complex to answer.
Yes, there are probably many reasons why custodial deaths still persist until today, despite decades and decades of us struggling with this issue. But I'm very sure that one that has definitely contributed has been a persistent lack of accountability for custodial deaths, which involve use of excessive force or perhaps negligence. Very few police officers have been charged in such cases, and even fewer convicted. I can only think of one police officer actually that was actually convicted and jailed for 3 years for causing hurt in relation to the death of A. Coogan in 2009. Even when the EAIC has unequivocally held following a public inquiry that the police were responsible for the death of a detainee, such as in the case of Damendran and Syed Azlan, the police officers in question were charged but were ultimately acquitted. And the EAIC also found that police officers had hidden and even fabricated evidence in relation to those deaths. But because police disciplinary inquiries are not public, we have no idea whether any officers involved in these actions were disciplined. This is not a new issue. It has plagued us through decades. And yet, barring Pakatan Harapan's brief moment in governance, there seems to be a persistent lack of political will on the part of so many successive governments to seriously tackle this issue of police accountability. And now, even after the public outcry over the deaths of A. Ganapati and S. Sivabalan, there has been hardly any response from our government ministers. To be honest, I couldn't find any. Perhaps there are, but I could not find any. So it is up to the public, therefore, to demand for accountability on this issue so that our leaders will be compelled to act decisively to address this important issue of police accountability.
So, you know, you point to this really serious problem. I think human rights advocates all around the world note of impunity, the ability for those who violate the rights of others to go, unpunished. And that seems to be, in fact, an incentive to continue those practices. The flip side of that, of course, is this rhetoric we hear from the authorities that they are, you know, systematically weeding out the bad hats and, you know, dealing with rogue elements in their force. I mean, where do you place the police stated commitment to get rid of these so-called rogue elements versus the problem of systematic impunity?
Well, like I said, despite what the police have said, there has been very, very few instances of police officers being charged in relation to deaths. These are serious deaths. I mean, in the case of Damendran, he was found to have massive wounds on his body, internal injuries, and staples in his ears. I mean, A. Coogan had V-shaped burn wounds on his back, most likely caused by an iron. These are not minor offences. These are very serious human rights violations that have involved the loss of lives. So for these kinds of instances, there needs to be public accountability. We need to see what is being done, and there needs to be transparency in the process. In many other jurisdictions, there are non-police members involved in these proceedings. In the UK, a non-police member actually chairs the disciplinary board. So no longer is it the case where police officers have complete control over the disciplinary proceedings and where it is closed and nobody knows anything about it. That is not consistent with public accountability, and it is not consistent with building trust in the institution of the police. If we cannot see what is going on, and we can only see that nothing has happened, for example, or very little has happened, then it is natural, only natural for the public to question what actually is being done.
Well, on that note, I'm just wondering about how far the public can question, because I'm drawn to something you said a little bit earlier about how, you know, there seems to be no political will for reform. And so it's up to us, the public, to keep pushing this matter to the forefront, and the role of the media to highlight these cases and keep them in the headlines. And I'm wondering about your views on the police investigations into media reporting on the deaths in custody, bringing people under investigation for commenting or questioning deaths in custody. What do you think about that?
I am very, very concerned, actually, to hear that journalists especially have been called up for the reports that they have made about these deaths in custody and comments that have been made, or calling up opposition MP Syed Saddiq, for example. The police wield tremendous power in the state. They can stop, search, arrest, investigate, interrogate. When a person is taken into custody, into police custody, they are entirely in the police's hands. They cannot choose to leave to see a doctor if they feel unwell. They cannot go home and get their medicine. They have to wear what the police provide. They have to eat what the police provide. Everything is in the police's hands. The only reason society allows the police to have this kind of power over the public is because they are limited by what the law allows them to do. There are checks and balances on that power. And one of the most important checks and balance to police power or any authority's power is the freedom of expression and the freedom of the media, that the media can report on abuses of power if and when they should occur. So if the press are not allowed to do their job, then our very fabric of society is being challenged. The press must not be intimidated for reporting without fear or favor on allegations of any abuse of power, whether it be by the police or by anyone in authority.
Well, thank you very much for supporting our work. I do want to ask you about that, those 22 months during the Pakatan Harapan administration, where there was some movement. Could you give us briefly a sense of what happened and who was resisting change at that point in time, and are they in power now?
Well, in those 22 months, the Pakatan Harapan did try pretty hard to pass the IPCMC bill. And they did come up with a bill which, although not perfect, but accepted by those that they had consulted, and they consulted widely with the police, with civil society, with stakeholders, with families of victims, with lawyers. And they did try very hard. So the signal from the top was very clear. They wanted to pass the IPCMC. Of course, there were concerns from the police. And when we were all in the same room together, some of these concerns were valid. They were concerned about what exactly would come under the IPCMC's purview. What about anonymous complaints? You know, would they be subject to anything and everything under the sun? And these concerns, as far as possible, were addressed. So it shows that it was possible, actually, despite the political hot potato that this IPCMC is, to get to the cusp of passing this bill and starting this process of police accountability, of being able to call into account serious police misconduct, and to see, for the public to see, police officers being disciplined when they do conduct serious abuses of power. So I think it was possible, and I hope it will be possible again.
But from the IPCMC, it became the IPCC, which is the Independent Police Conduct Commission Bill. And I'm just wondering whether, according to some commentators, they're saying that particular bill lacks the bite of the IPCMC. What do you think, Joanne?
Are you referring to the last year's bill under Perikatan Nasional?
Yes. Yeah.
So that is far inferior to anything that has been put forward so far, and far inferior to the current system we have of the EAIC. So the IPCC has even less investigative powers, no disciplinary powers, less independence, and all kinds of loopholes for the police to avoid answering questions should they choose to do so. So from that bill, I can see that our government is, in effect, not interested in pushing forward for the IPCMC and doing what it takes to set up a commission that will properly address the issue of police accountability with transparency. So I would say I hope that that IPCC bill is put to bed and we do not see it again, because it is not the answer to whatever it is that we are still facing today.
Joanne, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Appreciate your time. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. But before we leave you tonight, a reminder that you can get all the latest news on COVID-19 vaccines at astroawani.com and the Astro Awani app. Thank you so much for watching the show tonight. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
We'll be back with you same time tomorrow. Till then, good night.
Good night.